And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News, with Paul Hill.
Iceland is poised to become the first European country to outlaw male circumcision, amid signs that the ritual, common to both Judaism and Islam, may be a new battleground over religious freedom. A bill currently before the Icelandic Parliament proposes a penalty of up to 6 years in prison for anyone carrying out a circumcision other than for medical reasons. Critics say the move, which has sparked alarm among religious leaders across Europe, would make life for Jews and Muslims in Iceland unsustainable. One in three men globally is thought to be circumcised, the vast majority for religious or cultural reasons. Many Jews and Muslims fear the issue of circumcision could become a proxy for anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, pointing to similar tensions over religious dress and the ritual slaughter of animals for meat. Muslim and Jewish leaders attack the proposal, while Cardinal Reinhard Marx, president of the Catholic Church in the European Union, said the bill was a dangerous attack on religious freedom. The criminalization of circumcision is a very grave measure that raises deep concern. The Icelandic bill says the circumcision of young boys violates their rights and is incompatible with the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. It draws a parallel with female genital mutilation, already outlawed in most European countries. The bill says circumcisions are performed without anesthesia and claims the procedure is often carried out in homes that are not sterile and not by doctors but by religious leaders. There is a high risk of infections under such conditions that may lead to death. It acknowledges that while parents have the right to give religious guidance to their children, such a right can never exceed the rights of the child. Boys who wish to be circumcised for religious or cultural reasons can do so when they reach an age at which they understand what is involved in such an action, it suggests. Iceland's population of about 336,000 includes tiny Jewish and Muslim communities. There are thought to be some 250 Jews and about 1,500 Muslims. Silja Dogg Gunnarsdóttir, daughter of the centre-right Progressive Party, said she proposed the bill after realising that there was no ban on male circumcision, although FGM has been outlawed in Iceland since 2005. "If we have laws banning circumcision for girls, then we should do so for boys," she said. "We are talking about children's rights, not about freedom of belief. Everyone has the right to believe in what they want, but the rights of children come above the right to belief." Nordic countries had well-deserved reputations for promoting human rights, she added. "If Iceland backs this, I think other countries will follow." According to Milo UK, a Jewish campaign group to protect the right to circumcision, the procedure is only carried out by highly trained and regulated practitioners, known as mohalim. Boys are usually circumcised at 8 days old. A spokesman for Milo UK said, "Jewish male neonatal circumcision, known as Brit Mila, is a non-negotiable element of Jewish identity, common to Jews from all backgrounds and respected in liberal democratic countries. For a country such as Iceland, that considers itself a liberal democracy, to ban it, thus making sustainable Jewish life in the country impossible, is extremely concerning." Moshe Kantor, president of the European Jewish Congress, called for respect for the values of openness and tolerance and added that there was no evidence that circumcision was harmful. "We can only assume that this attempt to ban a core practice of Jewish communities comes from ignorance about the practice and its effects on Jewish children, rather than to send a message that Jews are no longer welcome in Iceland," he said. Ahmed Sadiq, the imam of the Islamic Cultural Centre of Iceland, said the bill contravened religious freedom. "Circumcision has been practiced for centuries. It is deeply rooted in cultural and religious traditions," he said. A meeting of religious organisations in Iceland was called early this month to discuss the bill, and they hope to issue a declaration of opposition, he added. Muslims in Iceland were already travelling to neighbouring countries to have the procedure performed on babies because of the reluctance of local doctors. But Sadiq said the medical benefits of this practice far exceed the risks. Jewish and Muslim communities warn that if circumcision is outlawed, the practice will go underground, or religious minorities will travel to relocate to countries where it is permitted. In Germany, a 2012 law permits only trained practitioners to perform circumcisions. It followed a controversial German court ruling which said circumcision permanently and irreparably changed a child's body and took away the individual's right to make his own decision on his religious affiliation. The following year, the Council of Europe passed a resolution calling on 47 member states to regulate practices concerning ritual circumcision to overcome some of the prevailing traditional methods which do not take into consideration the best interest of the child and the latest state of medical art. Israel said the resolution fostered hate and racist trends in Europe. 2 years ago, a judge sitting in a British family court said that the young children should not be circumcised until they are old enough to decide for themselves. NHS advice is that the risks associated with circumcisions when carried out by qualified and experienced doctors are small. The Icelandic bill comes against a backdrop of number of European countries prohibiting Islamic religious dress, such as the niqab or burqa. This spring, the Danish Parliament will debate a bill banning full-face veils in public. The Icelandic bill on circumcision has cross-party backing and wide public support, Gonestier said. If it passes its first reading, the bill will go into committee stage for several months before it can become law. Middle East Concern report that Iranian Christians request prayer for two Christian converts who have been held in Evin prison since their arrest on the 17th of November 2017. Vajidreza Susancha Kushani and Fatima Mohammadi were members of a house church meeting in Tehran. They were summoned to intelligence offices on the 17th of November and arrested. Vajidreza has been charged with membership of evangelistic groups and conducting evangelism under Article 498 of the Penal Code, which criminalizes the establishment of any group that aims to disrupt national security, in which case you could face between 2 and 10 years in prison if found guilty. However, it is also possible that he will be charged under Article 500, whoever engages in any type of propaganda against the Islamic Republic of Iran or in support of opposition groups and associations shall be sentenced to 3 months to 1 year of imprisonment. Vajidreza was recently transferred from Ward 209 of Evin Prison, which is under the control of the intelligence services, to Ward 4. Fatima is in the women's ward of Evin Prison. Iranian Christians will ask you to pray that A. God will comfort and strengthen them and console their families, and that their right to religious freedom will be upheld and that they will be acquitted, and also that they will be released soon and that Iranian officials will have the opportunity through them to hear the gospel, repent, and receive salvation through Jesus Christ. A man in Russia's southern province of Dagestan shot into a crowd of people leaving a church on Sunday, killing five and injuring at least five others, Russian news agencies reported, citing the local health ministry. The attack occurred in the village of Kizlya in the Muslim-majority Republic of Dagestan, agencies said. The small republic in the Caucasus Mountains borders Chechnya, where Moscow has led two wars against separatists and radical religious groups since the 1991 Soviet collapse, and which has seen a large number of people join Islamic State. Russian news agencies said the attack occurred as churchgoers celebrated Malentia, a Christian holiday marking the last day before Lent, according to the Eastern Orthodox calendar. The assailant was identified as a 22-year-old man local to the region, the TASS news agency said, citing the investigative committee. He was shot and killed by security services who were on duty nearby, TASS said, adding that a hunting rifle, bullets and a knife were discovered on his person. Initial reports suggested all five victims were women, TASS said, citing the local branch of the Interior Ministry. The injured included two members of local security services and two civilians, also women, the Interfax news agency said. Islamic State claimed responsibility for the shooting, according to the militant group's news agency AMAK, although it did not provide immediate evidence for the claim. Mobile phone providers are preparing to install antennas in church spires across the UK, after ministers and bishops signed an agreement aimed at using the Church of England's buildings to help obliterate black spots. A new accord between the government and the church sets out a joint plan to improve connectivity in rural areas by making use of spires and towers, following the successful use of the structures to improve access to high-speed broadband in two dioceses. The new agreement, signed by Matt Hancock, the Digital Secretary, and Dr. David Walker, the Bishop of Manchester, following a summit in December, states that the government and church will work with both the mobile and broadband providers to help deliver improved connectivity. It includes a pledge to work with operators to draw up a standard of contract that could be used for churches hosting mobile and broadband equipment. Currently, more than 100 churches are used to boost broadband signal in local areas after dioceses of Norwich and Chelmsford pioneered schemes to encourage the use of their buildings to help improve the reach of the high-speed internet. Only a handful currently contain equipment boosting a mobile signal. The agreement is intended to lead to far more of the church's 16,000 church buildings housing mobile and broadband equipment, which currently includes wireless transmitters, aerials and satellite dishes. Mobile UK, the industry body representing EE, O2, 3 and Vodafone, welcomed the announcement, stating that where spires and towers could be used to boost signal, the operators would extend the use of churches to increase mobile coverage and capacity while respecting the church environment. The announcement of the accord comes after Ofcom, the communications regulator, discussed that 82% of properties in rural areas do not receive a 4G signal from all of the major phone networks, compared to 36% in urban areas, meaning that many people are unable to access high-speed internet on their mobiles. The disclosure in December led to claims that families and small businesses in rural areas were being left behind. The agreement between the church and the government, which has also been signed by Lord Gardiner, the Rural Affairs Minister, and William Nye, Secretary General of the Archbishop's Council, states, "By working together with mobile and broadband providers, we believe that we can help deliver improved connectivity, particularly in rural areas, and thereby bring about important practical benefits to congregations, local communities, local businesses, and visitors alike." Mr. Hancock said, "This agreement with the Church of England will mean that even a 15th century building can help make Britain fit for the future, improving people's lives by boosting connectivity in some of our hardest to reach areas." The Right Reverend Stephen Cottrell, the Bishop of Chelmsford, told the Sunday Telegraph that in a digital world, he regarded the deprivation of signal in some areas as a very serious impoverishment of people's lives. Deep inside looters' tunnels dug beneath the tomb of Jonah in the ancient Iraq city of Nineveh, archaeologists have uncovered 2,700-year-old inscriptions that describe the rule of an Assyrian king named Esarhaddon. The seven inscriptions were discovered in four tunnels beneath the biblical prophet's tomb, which is a shrine that's sacred to both Christians and Muslims. The shrine was blown up by the Islamic State group during its occupation of Nineveh from June 2014 until January 2017. ISIS or ISIS-backed looters apparently dug the tunnels to look for archaeological treasures from the Assyrian kings in what is today Iraq. One inscription in translation reads, "The palace of Esarhaddon, strong king, king of the world, king of Assyria, governor of Babylon, king of Sumer and Akkad, king of the kings of Lower Egypt, Upper Egypt and Kush, an ancient kingdom located south of Egypt in Nubia. Kush leaders at one point ruled Egypt, according to ancient inscriptions found at other archaeological sites. Those inscriptions also say that Esarhaddon defeated the Kush rulers and chose new rulers to govern Egypt. Another inscription found under the tomb of Jonah says that Esarhaddon reconstructed the temple of the god Assur, the chief god of the Assyrians, rebuilt the ancient cities of Babylon and Esagil, and renewed the statues of the great gods. The inscriptions date to the reign of King Sennacherib, and they all say that this king had the inner wall and outer wall of Nineveh built anew and raised as high as mountains." Archaeologists found several inscriptions near the tomb of Jonah during the 1987 and 1992 excavations. One of them was written on a prism-shaped clay object and discusses Esarhaddon's many military conquests, including Sicilia, located on the southern coast of what is now Turkey. The transcribed inscription calls Esarhaddon the one who treads on the necks of the people of Sicilia. Esarhaddon claims in the inscription that, I surrounded, conquered, plundered, demolished, destroyed, and burned with fire 21 of their cities, together with small cities in their environs. The inscription also discusses his conquest of Sidon, located in modern-day Lebanon, claiming that Esarhaddon's army tore down the city's walls and threw them into the Mediterranean Sea. The remains of ancient inscriptions from other sites that ISIS tried to loot and destroy have also been found. After the ancient Assyrian city of Nimrod was recaptured in November 2017, the surviving inscriptions included one describing a monkey colony that once flourished at Nimrod. And finally, there was a new Lutheran pastor who wanted to rent a house in the country. The only house available was rumored to be haunted. Since the pastor didn't believe in such things, he rented it. It wasn't long before the ghost made its appearance. The pastor told his friends about the ghost, but they didn't believe him. They told him the only way they would believe was if he took a picture of the ghosts. The pastor went home and called for the ghost. When it appeared, he explained the situation and asked the ghost if it would mind having its picture taken. The ghost agreed. When the picture was developed, the ghost wasn't visible. Feeling very disappointed, the pastor called again for the ghost. When it appeared, the pastor showed it the picture and wanted to know why the ghost wasn't in it. The ghost thought for a minute and replied, "Well, I guess the spirit was willing, but the flesh was weak." Sorry. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.